This is The Takeaway, and we're going to end this hour trying to imagine. You know, we've talked about all the big global implications and some of the domestic political implications, but trying to imagine what this moment of re-election must be like to Barack Obama, inwardly, personally, and to his family. And we're going to speak for the next few minutes with Jody Cantor, correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, who wrote that great book, The Obamas, attempting to be a fly on the wall there in a very, very high-powered family. Jody Cantor, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
What do you think is going on at the breakfast table at the Obamas this week? Is it a huge sigh of relief? Is there a sense of personal vindication here? What do you think the mission was for Barack Obama in getting reelected?
There was a really sweet moment yesterday when the president was going on Air Force One to return to Washington. He and Sasha had a little race up the stairs. And, you know, they normally don't do that. They're normally very sort of dignified in the way they ascend that staircase. And you could just feel the sense of collective relief overtaking that family. You know, and the way you framed it, I think, is exactly right, because imagine the profound relief of having finished with this campaign season. But I would really up the ante from that. I mean, remember that this is a family that succeeded at the highest level of politics without ever really wanting to be in politics. And so the relief of this race is not only the gigantic relief of having finished a titanically difficult presidential campaign, but Barack Obama never has to run for office again. I mean, this has been Michelle Obama's dream for years, right? To have him finally done with the campaign trail.
And they can focus on those young girls.
They can focus on those young girls. And remember that Barack Obama's kind of lifelong fantasy and rationale is always, if I can just get to the next level, I can stop worrying about politics and concentrate on real change. That's what he said basically every time he's run for office. You know, gee, if I can just vault myself from the U.S. Senate into the presidency, then I can really do the things I care about. That, in some sense, has never been as true as it is now. He really is more free of political constraints than he's ever been. But that said, you know, there are a lot of Obama supporters out there who have this fantasy that, you know, in a second term, Barack Obama is almost going to be like, you know, a superhero ripping off his suit, and his real beliefs, you know, are going to be written on a shirt underneath, and he's going to start being as progressive allies wish he were, or as geared towards African-American issues as African-American supporters wish he were. And that, I think, is a little bit of a fantasy, because he still has many, many constraints, foremost being the Republican majority in the House of Representatives.
You know, so much to talk about here. What do you think Barack Obama's view of the presidency is as a sort of historical piece, and his contribution to that history?
Well, that's what I wrote about in yesterday's New York Times. I wrote about these little-known private dinners that the president has had with top presidential historians. I should start by saying that the president doesn't really dine with anybody. He only leaves his family two nights a week for dinner. He's not a schmoozy guy. He's never had Bill Clinton to the White House for dinner. And yet, three times he invited the country's top presidential historians, people like Robert Caro and Doris Kearns Goodwin, to talk to him. Now, this is something other presidents have done before, but he did it very differently. He wasn't there to sort of bask in history's glow and talk about his predecessors' personalities. He was really strategic. He wanted to know, you know, what can I learn from Ronald Reagan's reelection? How did Teddy Roosevelt manage to pass progressive programs despite a hostile Congress? It, you know, what David Kennedy from Stanford, another top presidential historian, said to me is that it was almost like he was writing his own history book about himself, like he could see himself in the pantheon of presidents and was trying to write his place.
You know, I ran into Joe Biden, the vice president, on an Amtrak train totally by accident, and I was reading Caro's latest book on Johnson. And Biden just sort of volunteered to me that that book was a huge book circulating at the White House, both by being read by him and by Barack Obama, as they were trying to deal with all of these legislative challenges and the sense of gridlock, a real admiration for what Johnson managed to accomplish there in the White House.
Well, people, you know, there are two Democratic presidents who are often used as kind of clubs with which to beat Barack Obama. One is LBJ, the other is Clinton, because Obama is so different from both of them, right? I mean, Obama is not really a legislative strategist by nature, the way Johnson was. And he's not this huge personality, people person, backslapper, the way those two presidents were. He's much more of an introvert. He's a kind of solitary figure as president. But when I talk to these presidential historians about what kind of lessons other presidents can teach Barack Obama for his second term, they had a kind of surprising answer. You know, I expected them to be full of analogies and whatnot, and they said there are no analogies to what Barack Obama is facing now. Nobody has ever faced this level of solid congressional opposition. Nobody else has ever faced quite these circumstances in the country. And what Barack Obama has to do is actually stop looking to the past and really carve his own path. What they think what he needs to do is both rally more public support for his initiatives, forge a better connection with the country than the one he had in his first term, and also figure out a way to work with Congress. But they said there are no obvious models on how to do that.
You know, you said something that kind of makes me sad a moment ago, that, you know, Barack Obama has wanted to get to the next level and then he'll be able to do what he needs to do. You know, you've described really, in a way, the dysfunction of the presidency itself, because in both the case of Johnson and the case of Clinton, they wanted to win that term, that second term, so that they could do what they needed to do. And both were derailed. And in the case of Clinton, he only really has been able to do what he wanted to do, vision-wise, as a post-president. What do you think the Barack Obama legacy will be here?
Well, two quick things. First of all, second terms are notorious for going awry. They almost, one of the historians said to me, God, you know, all of these guys want so badly to get reelected, and then every second term turns into a mess. So, you know, part of the guessing game here is what could really knock Barack Obama off course in a second term. You know, that said, you know, part of the advantage of Obama's second term is that he knows so much more than he did before. He really did come to Washington 4 years ago without a lot of managerial, national security, economic Washington experience. And yet he's had one of the greatest learning curves in American political history. And so part of the question for his second term is, how does he use that knowledge and put it to work in a second term?
Jody Kantor, correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, and author of The Obamas. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.